And I believe that this is something that if we learn how to forgive other people, we learn how to forgive ourselves and kavyochol to forgive HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's very important for a person to understand how to do that. Because when you learn how to forgive, you unlock yourself, you free yourself. And you think sometimes when you're forgiving somebody else, you feel like you're letting him get off the hook. But in reality, when you're forgiving the other person, you're letting yourself off the hook. You're letting yourself, setting yourself free. How do we do that? I would like to start talking about this and explaining from a very deep place that when a person comes to Yom Kippur, before we get to Yom Kippur, so we know that there's a concept of asking people for forgiveness. So everybody says the reason why you have to ask for forgiveness is because Lecha levadcha chatati, to you Hashem alone I sinned. I didn't sin to anybody else, it's just between me and you, God. But I believe that the purpose of asking for forgiveness is not for the person to get the forgiveness between him and his friend. But the purpose is to give a chance to somebody else to forgive. We know that Hashem, He acts to us like we act to other people. Hashem Tzilcha, Hashem is your shadow. So you move this way, He moves that way, you move this way, He moves that way. And when we forgive, Hashem also forgives. So the reason why we're in the position, we ask the other people for forgiveness, is not only for the person to get forgiveness to him, to come to Yom Kippur, and then Hashem could forgive his sins because he's already clean with his friend. But more, I think on a deeper level, there's also a concept here of giving people the chance to be overcome their own egos. You know, if you ask yourself, somebody tells you that Hashem has a prayer. So you say, what does that mean? Hashem has a prayer? It's almost like apikorsis, the such a thing. As if Hashem needs to pray. Who's he praying to? But believe it or not, it says, Va'avioisim al harkochi v'simachtim bebeis tfilosi. Hashem calls the Beis HaMikdash the Beis Tfilosi. It's the place where I pray. Anybody knows what the prayer of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is? What Hashem prays? Hashem hopes and wishes that he could be Mizgaber on his own judgment, that the Midas HaRachim could be Mizgaber on Midas HaDin. So Hashem himself is overcoming his own din, the own things, how he has the world, how he expects it to be. And he asks us to bless him that way. He asks, like Tanya, the story about Rishmo, Kohen Gadol. And this is what he wants from us to do as well. He wants us to overcome our egos. We see Haben Yakir Li Ephraim Im Yelet Shashuim Ki Midei Dav Riboy Zohar Eskerenu Oid Al Ken Hamu Me'aloi Racham Arachamenu Ne'um Hashem Haben Yakir Li. Do I have a son who is so precious to me? Ephraim, who's Ephraim? Not Menashe and Ephraim. Ephraim means the Jewish people who are willing to become like Ephraim, to become like ashes. They're willing to overcome their own egos. And that's a darling child to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a Ben Yakir Li. That's a precious son to God. A lot of times we see kids having issues that somebody took something from them and they have a hard time with that. One time one of my children came to me and said, you know that your other son, you know, he stole, he's a thief. So what is he? He said, he stole my Playmobil, he stole my toys. we went together to the other son, and he said, you stole his toys? It's not his toys, it's my toys. So we started to realize it wasn't the one version of the story. There's another version of the story. So I asked the son who accused his brother as the thief, I said to him, can you maybe ask your brother in a nice way that even though it's very possible it could be also his toy, maybe he's willing to let you use it also to overcome the ego. And we are big kids also fighting over what we think is really ours. We have a hard time sometimes coming to another person who has another version of a story to be able to ask him in a nice way and to be able to find the right words to explain what's bothering us. This is what I believe is something that we have to come to terms with. Because we come to this step, I'll get into before Yom Kippur, and people ask us for forgiveness. Sometimes we don't forgive them. And anybody know why we don't forgive them? Because we have egos. And because we want to have control. We want to control the situation. Sometimes the only way we can control the situation is by not letting go. So the power to forgive is really about somebody asking himself the right questions. If you know how to ask yourself the right questions, you'll be able to forgive. I wonder if anybody has a pen and paper next to them to try to put down on a pen and paper. If you ever felt angry, you ever felt you have a grudge, you felt resentment from somebody, it could be a Rebbe, it could be a parent, and I'm saying to you guys, honest and open, I'm an open book. The way I write, I'm an open book. The way I speak, I'm an open book. I'm a person who is many years, I'm 40 years old, and I have grudges of people that I held with me for so long. And the truth is, the only person who really suffered from it is not those people. They have no idea that it's still bothering me, these things. And if I would talk to them about what's bothering me, it turns out that they have a totally different version of the story. They have no idea. As a matter of fact, they have a totally different version of the story in the sense that they think that they did something as a favor to me. And I took it as something that I'm upset at them. So what I'm suggesting is something fantastic. The reason why we have this grudge and our ego is because not the bare facts, the real truth of what happened that's bothering us. What's really bothering us is our version of the real facts is bothering us. Therefore, if you have something that's bothering you about somebody, the guy didn't come to you to speak to you before Yom Kippur, but you want to forgive him anyway. Because you want to cause Baruch Hu to forgive you. I didn't come here to give a Yom Nirom speech. It's not what I'm here to do. You have rabbis, I'm not worthy of being a Rebbe. I'm not learning enough, I'm not involved enough, but I'm writing and I'm helping people, character development. I feel this is something that could help you more than anything. Because everybody knows that in order for you to grow, in order for you to change, you can't change the past. The only thing you could change is the future. Now, what's holding us back? We all want an amazing future. We all want to have a great long-term perspective of success. We all want to think a year ahead, 5 years ahead. But there's something that's holding us back. We have this thing from the past, which a lot of us don't even realize we even have it. And I'm not going to say everybody's got to go to psychology because I don't think that's the truth. But I think that everybody knows deep down something that's maybe bothering them from something that happened from a parent, or an older sibling, or an older or a friend. Or I still have things bothering me when I was in Edison Yeshiva, 9th grade, 10th grade, that the older Bachurim from the 3rd year Bais Medrash, they didn't let us have any meat in the cholent. It still bothers me. What do they think they are? My parents are paying tuition the same way. It still bothers me. Why does it still bother people? And I don't want anybody. You know why it's still bothering me? I'll tell you why it's still bothering me. Because I want to protect myself that that's not going to happen again. That nobody's going to take something that I deserve as mine. Now tell me, there's a truth that somebody is really going to take something that's mine and that I could stop that? Do I really have control of every single thing to protect myself? It's like, imagine you want to protect yourself, so you're taking this big tank. You have this big Merkava on your shoulders and you're trying to run forward in life, but you can't because you're trying to protect things that are a long old story that doesn't happen anymore. Nobody's going to take the meat from my children. As a matter of fact, because of that, it could be I have a little bit of extra weight on me because I'm still thinking about, hey, maybe we're going to have an extra piece of meat in the children. So I'm always making sure I have that extra piece of meat. This is exactly what emotional eating is about. This is exactly why people need to drink alcohol. They need to be able to forget the past. But instead of just forgetting the past, you know the thing that's bothering you. If you're able to forgive, the person you're letting off the hook is not the person you're forgetting. You're letting yourself off the hook. You're taking that big Merkavah tank that's on your shoulders, holding you back from running. You're ditching it behind, and then you can just start flying. So how do we do that? I hope anybody here, is anybody feeling what I'm talking about? I mean, understand what I'm saying? If you do understand what I'm saying, you have a question? Please ask questions. It gets it much more exciting. Yes?
No.
Nobody? You just feel what I'm saying, right? So if you have something that bothers you, something amazing, it's the truth, is that, and it's very important for your learning, when you learn Gemara, when you're writing, when you understand the Shir, if you can't write it down, then it's like monkeys jumping up and down in your head. If you can't take this idea and make it objective, say, I am angry at my Rosh Hashiva that he allowed the third Jibbis Meir guys to take the meat and the children. I can't write, I am angry at my older sister from, I remember when I was 5 years old, I went, was 6 years old, I went with my parents, my uncle and my brother and sisters, we went to one of those arcade places where you do the skee ball and all that stuff, and you get these cards and tickets, and I remember coming home as a kid, there was on the shelf when you redeem the tickets, you get like these little, What is it called? You get these dolls, and you get these doll toys, and I didn't realize, and I saw that my brothers, so I took one with me, and went home. My older sister, when she saw that I had it at home, she said, you stole it? I was like, I guess so. And then, do you realize that if the police knew this, they would put you in jail? Until today, now, when I'm driving and I get a flash because I'm driving too fast, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a ticket. Now, there's so many other cars that are going over the speed limit. I think it's me. And I wonder why. We have to sometimes go back and start to, as an older person, now I'm 40 years old, I'm a big boy now, I can say it back 1 second. The police are really coming after you because I took that little doll. They're not coming after me because I took that little doll. Is it worth them to drive and find me? Then all of a sudden I hear sirens. I say, oh, that's it. They're coming after me now. Okay? So what we have to do is be able to get, now we're older people. We're bigger. We're now 18, 19, 20. We can understand things. We got the third generation. We know how it is that, it's not that we're taking the younger brothers. I just got one piece of meat. So all the third year guys, and there wasn't any meat for the ninth graders, the freshies. That's how it just is. So a lot of times we get older, we see things from higher perspectives. And in order for us to be able to see those things that are emotions that bother us, we need to be able to write it down. I am angry at my sister because she got me afraid of the police. And let me ask that question. Once it's written down on a piece of paper, now we can ask certain questions. Okay? Rabotai. Raboisa. We need to be able to ask the four questions. If you write down, these are the four questions. Listen closely. Question number one is it the truth that my sister got me afraid of the police? Is it the truth? Yes. Or maybe I'm just a person who generally is afraid. And I took it a little bit step further. So I'm angry at my sister, older sister. I'm angry at the older third year Bachurim because they took the meat from the cholent. I'm angry at the Rosh Yeshiva who didn't step up for me when there was something going on in the yeshiva and he wasn't standing on my side. So when we have all these versions of the story, we have to start asking ourselves, first of all, ask yourself, who am I angry at? Who am I angry at and what did he do? You'll find many times that you have nobody to be angry at. It's just the situation. And because, listen closely, because there's nobody that you could put into a word, into a definitive statement that's on a hard piece of paper with ink. So what ends up happening is you say, oh, this emotion is irrational. And then you're able to get rid of it. I want to explain, when somebody's crying, I went to this coaching, one of the greatest things you could do to help somebody, you could help them feel that, help the person, you feel them, you understand them, is that every emotion has a word to it. I remember laying down in the dentist chair when he was fixing my wisdom tooth, there was on the ceiling maybe 40 different emojis. And every emoji had a different term that was describing that emotion. Right? How many emojis are there on the iPhone? Anybody know? How many emojis are there on the Samsung? How many know? Imagine you have 50, 60, and every emotion, upset, confused, sad. Once you tell somebody, oh, that must be very difficult to go through. That must be you must have a lot of anxiety going in that position. When you give the person the emotion that is going to describe that feeling, then the person feels what we call empathy. Feels somebody was with him in his emotion. And you helped him tremendously because he had an emotion that couldn't be described by a word, by a term. You gave a stempel, you gave a stamp. That's maybe what you felt. And then the person says, yes, that's how I felt. And you helped him just because you gave him a word to explain how he felt. When somebody cries with tears, it's because tears is an expression of an emotion that cannot be described by a word. It's too much for a word to describe it. When you take your own emotions and you try to give it a word of what exactly you felt, that I am upset, I am frustrated at a certain situation, you put on a piece of paper, you already feel that you could deal with it much, much better. Now, after you have that on, I just recently had a story. I'm helping my father as a yeshiva. My father himself gave over $100 million to tzedakah. And now he can't do it anymore. He has a yeshiva, Svar Yeshiva, 350 Israeli low-income family boys. And I helped him. I sometimes do so much just to be there for him and help fundraise. And I was showing that a beautiful davening. I went to the bathroom and there was no tissues in the bathroom on Rosh Hashanah. 7-10 stalls, 500 people davening. There's no tissues. I got so mad at my brother-in-laws who were running the maintenance. I got upset at my father-in-law. I got upset at the Arab that was supposed to be cleaning. And every person had a different part of the responsibility. Why was there no tissues in the bathroom? I felt like I'm giving so much of this. Why are there no? What type of disrespect you have to these low-income Sephardi boys? I do everything for the respect of these kids, and you don't even have a decency to think that they might need tissues in the bathroom. And there's a flood on the floor. How are they supposed to go to the bathroom like this? I was so mad till I asked myself, who am I angry at? You ever see a kid who's upset about something? Don't ask him what's bothering him. Ask him, who are you angry at? So because you first think, who is angry? And then you say, okay, what's bothering? What did that person do? When you ask, who am I angry at? Then all of a sudden, the person, I had to start thinking, well, the guy who's in charge of the Arab to make him come, he didn't have enough money maybe to ask that the Arab should come an hour earlier to make sure there's enough tissues in the bathroom. Now, why didn't he have enough money? Maybe because I'm not doing my job in fundraising well enough. So what ends up happening is that when you start asking the who question, you start making it, okay, let's get to things here. Let's not let this emotion take over, but instead, let's give it definitive terms. And when there's definitive terms, we can deal with it much better. Step number two, after we say who are we angry at, we ask, is it the truth? Is that the real story? Is it the truth that because of this person, there's no tissues in the bathroom? There's many reasons why there's no tissues in the bathroom in the yeshiva. It could be that there's another bachur that could have been responsible. And if I cared enough about it, maybe I could have made sure that there was tissues in the bathroom. And I learned the lesson. I know that this is what sometimes problems in yeshiva. Maybe I could make sure next time that there's a closet outside in case of emergency, not enough tissues, that there's going to be tissues in the bathroom in yeshiva. So what we're getting at over here is that there are a few steps for a person to be able to forgive. Number one is, we said, who and what did he do? Number two is, we ask ourselves, is that the real truth of this story? Number three is there anything truer than that version of the story? Number four is, where would I be without that thought? Something amazing happens. When a bachur comes to Bais Medrash, he wants to start say that 9:15, he got up early, he had a great chakras, and 9:15 and his gemara is not in the place where it usually is. And he looks around for 15 minutes, he's not finding it. Anybody go through that situation? How does that feel? Some people get angry, get frustrated, right? And then you ask yourself, wait, who am I angry at? Who am I angry at? I'm angry at the guy who took my gemara and put it somewhere. One second. Who's that guy? So basically, you don't know, you're angry at a big question mark. Doesn't make sense. That's irrational. So we have to think, instead of doing that, say, okay, the real only person that we could be angry at in this story is myself. Because if I really cared that I'll have my Gemara on time at 9:15, and I don't want somebody to take it by mistake next time, so if I would put it in a place where make sure nobody, 99%, is going to take it from that place, then I'll be in a better position next time. It shouldn't happen. So if you start to ask yourself in that way, you'll notice that I could take control and responsibility. Then I'm more powerful. I'm empowered because I could take control of the situation. But as long as I'm angry, what is happening is I lose control of the situation. So the idea over here is something fantastic. Instead of me turning the responsibility on just some question mark, I don't even know who the guy in my Gemara is, I could turn it on myself. But we said again, the next question is, the third question is, where would I be without that thought? I have a thought, I'm angry, some idiot moved my Gemara. Where would I be without that thought? How many times do you think, which idiot moved my Gemara? I'm going for 15 minutes asking my question. Why did he move my Gemara? What an idiot. I'm going through that same question in my head the whole time. Instead of going through that question, where would you be if you didn't have that thought? I asked the Bachur who was actually telling me this in my last class, I discussed this. He said, where I would be without the thought, I said, okay, somebody took my Gemara, this is the situation, I'll probably just find any Gemara, take a photocopy, and just sit down and learn. And maybe I'll find it some other time. But the problem is that you let that thought take over you. You let it become your God. Lo yeh becha kel zar. When somebody lets anger overcome him, he is totally ruled by this anger. So what we need to do is, we need to be able to ask ourselves this question. The way to help yourself think, the way to focus is the power of asking questions. They asked Albert Einstein, how could it be that years and years and years of physics, nobody was able to get to your toenails in physics, he was able to come up with tremendous and revolutionary inventions. He said, the reason why I got to where I got is I asked different questions, so I got different answers. So the guy who's looking for his Gemara and is all peeved about it is because when he's walking around, he asks, who took my Gemara? Who took my Gemara? What an idiot. Why did he do that? Instead of him asking himself that question, he could have turned it around and say, okay, somebody took my Gemara. What am I going to do about it now? Different question to ask. You'll be more empowered. And this is the same questions that could help you with the hardest problems, the hardest emotions that you could ever have. And the next question is, how can the opposite be true? I'm angry at the administrator because of there's no tissues in the bathroom. But is it because of him? Maybe it's because of me that there's no dishes in the bathroom. Could it be that the reason why I don't have a Gemara is not because some idiot took it, maybe because I am the person who put it in the wrong place. So when you turn it around, it doesn't mean you're going to be angry at yourself. You'll be able to understand a real deeper truth. And that's all we want. Because the thing that's going to help you overcome your anger and your things that are bothering you is when you look for the deeper truth. Anybody has any emotion, anybody is frustrated, upset at somebody, wants to overcome it, and wants, has enough guts to do it up here and talk to me about it, we could do it in front of the entire class, be happy to do it. So somebody could think about that and give a few minutes for everybody to think if somebody wants to go through that. If not, we're going to continue the class. If somebody has enough guts to go over something that they feel that is bothering them with somebody in the past, you don't have to say who it was, but we'll go through the circumstance, we'll ask the questions, we'll find the truth, and you'll see the thing that bothered you for 5-10 years, you could just let it go if you look for the truth in it. I feel like I just took all the focus of the room, put it back on the entire. It seems that nobody here has anybody that they're angry at. Nobody has anything that they feel they're upset at. No Rebbe in the past, no teacher, no friend. Or maybe it's just that people here know the truth deep down that it's not a real story. Nobody has a real, real story. You're holding on to your own stories because you want to feel power. And you don't want to be Afer, you don't want to be Ephraim. But Hashem is telling you before Yom Kippur, you want to be Kaperes Melashon. The same word of cleansing is the word Kippur. Kippur means to cleanse. You want to clean yourself from the things that are bothering you. Okay, you want to do that? Now is the time. Now is the time as we get close to Yom Kippur to find the real truth inside us and to overcome and say, you know what, it's just my ego. It's amazing how much your ego is holding you back from doing amazing things.
from being able to reach your goals, from being able to be free. I found that in coaching, there's a very big difference between coaching, psychology, and psychiatry. I think it's important to know this. The difference between coaching, psychology, and psychiatry is that coaching is about looking towards the future. A good coach is supposed to help people who are healthy and functioning. A good coach is somebody who's going to help somebody who's real, who knows what he wants to do, and he's going to help him to get from point A to point B. A coach is about looking through the front shield. What is it called?
Windshield.
The front windshield. The psychologist is the person who's helping you overcome the things from your past. A person who's not. How do you know if you need to go to a psychologist or a coach? How do you know if you're supposed to be looking forward or undoing your past? If you are functioning, you're a functioning human being, you want to go with the future, you want to stick with the future, because I tell you what, it's pretty hard to drive while you're looking in the rearview mirror too long, right? You only want to do that when you're stuck. You have to go back, you have to fix things. The way to overcome many, many issues of life, things that are bothering you, holding you back, is by looking 5 years ahead, looking a year ahead. Something very important to know. Most people underestimate what they could do in 5 years, and they overestimate what they could do in 1 year. When you think about from now, what would be the greatest me that I could be in 5 years from now? If I think about the future, proven studies have shown people with long-term perspectives are the people who are most successful. People with short-term perspectives, they just take life as it goes. They roll with the punches. What we want to do is we want to be able to, from now, as we are at this age of life, to be able to think long-term perspective. What does it mean to me? What is important to me? When we say on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we say, Kuzveinu b'sefer tzaddikim v'chassidim. It's an interesting request because you're asking Hashem to put you in the book of the righteous. The righteous have a reason why they're in that book. It's because the righteous have rov zchiyos. They're a majority of merits. That's why they're able to be in that book. The Rishayim have majority of onos. They're not going to be in the right book, in the right book of righteous. So what does it help to ask Hashem to put you in a book that you're not supposed to be there? You're asking, please God, put me in the book, the righteous. You don't deserve to be there. Why would you think that if you ask, he's going to put you there? The answer is that when we look forward and look up to the people who are righteous. We look towards the tzaddikim and we say, Hashem, I want to be with those guys. Hashem, that's who you want to be with? That's who you are. It's very interesting that the judgment of Rosh Hashanah is not judgment, and Yom Kippur, is not judgment according to your past. It's judgment according to your future. Hashem doesn't judge you now according to who you were. He sees in you right now who you want to be, and according to who you want to be, I believe in this God, I'm going to invest in him. So it depends on from now what you look forward to. Some people can't look forward because they're always stuck with the past. We need to be able to overcome the past, to forgive in order to us to move on. There was a story with Shlomo HaMelech. It's found in Midrash Aseret Dibros. There was once a group of businessmen, three businessmen, that they went on a long business trip, made a lot of money, came back, and on the way back in the boat, towards back to the land that they were coming back to Israel, they had a big storm at sea, and they found a little, they were afraid that they were going to drown, or the treasure chest, they're going to lose some of the money, and they found a little island, and they went towards the island there on the side, and they'll stay there for the high tides, the hurricane to pass, and they found a little tree that they were able to dig next to that tree, where they put under that tree the treasure chest. And they said, they made a deal between them, that they're not going to come, nobody's going to come back to take the treasure chest until they come back, all three of them together. After the hurricane subsided, these three businessmen, they continued on their journey to Eretz Yisrael. When they got here, They rested up and they came back, like the time that they appointed, a week later, to that little island to dig up the treasure chest. And when they got to that island, they dug up the treasure chest and they found that it was missing. Somebody took the treasure. And they started to fight between them, arguing who was the one who took this treasure. And they started accusing each other. They said, we have to come to a decision of exactly who's the person to go to. We need somebody like Shlomo HaMelech with the wisdom who could be able to help us to find the solution of exactly how could it be that this treasure chest is missing? Who stole it? So when they got to Shlomo HaMelech, Shlomo says, I hear you guys, very hard case to decide. But I think that the solution is, I'm going to have to think about it for overnight. Come back to me tomorrow, and I'll have an answer for you guys. The next morning, when Shlomo HaMelech comes, he says, I thought about it all night, but I really couldn't come up with a solution. But I want to ask you something that happened overnight. I got a letter from the Roman emperor, which is interesting because according to another medrash that Shlomo HaMelech, when he married 1,000 women, it ended up happening that Hashem sent an angel to put a reed in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea that turned out to be the boot of Italy. So it's interesting that the Medrash says that there was a Roman emperor in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. But the story was that the Roman emperor sent to Shlomo HaMelech a letter. The letter said on the letter, I have a question for Shlomo HaMelech to help me to answer. And this is what the letter said. Shlomo says, I have a question to ask you because I can't answer the Roman emperor's question alone. The question is the following. The story happened in Italy that there was a princess, beautiful princess, that she was a young girl, 8 years old, 9 years old. She was in the forest and she was walking outside of it and she got lost on her way and she fell into a pit. And she couldn't, she was calling and nobody able to hear her. And it went on a day, 2 days, and she's hungry, she's thirsty. She's calling, she has no voice left after her screaming so much. And finally, after 2 days of sitting, being stuck in this pit, she's calling and calling with a hoarse voice. And a farmer's son, simple farmer's son, was passing by and he heard the voice and he helped this princess to get out of the pit. So the princess told this boy, I owe you so much. You're such a great, you saved me. I owe you my life. She says, I promise you that when I get older, I want to marry you. He said, thank you so much. It's so kind of you. I'm happy to do this thing, especially the king's daughter. And this princess, she was able to find a way back to the palace. And she lived on her life and she learned the art. She came ready for marriage so many years later, 10 years later. And she started dating different princesses from different lands. And she decided there was a certain prince that she wanted to marry. And this prince and princess, they got together and they had the kings of both countries and they made a beautiful wedding with a 100-piece band. And as this princess is walking down to get married down the aisle, she remembers the promise that she gave to the farmer's son so many years earlier. And she tells the prince that she's going to marry. I can't do this. I can't get married to you. He says, well, why can't you get married to me? She says, because I remember that I gave my word to a certain farmer's son many years ago when I was stuck in a pit and he saved my life. It's not right for me to do this. I don't want to break my word. And he says, I respect that. So let's go together and we'll go to the farmer's son and we'll ask his permission. And they came with the whole 100-piece band and the whole entourage and all the, they gave a special treasure chest of gold and silver and precious stones to bring to the farmer's son. And they come to the farmer's son's house. Now he's already a 20-year-old boy. They knock on his door and they said, you know, we had the promise to marry you and we're asking you if you're okay with letting this girl marry the prince. He said, the truth is, and I didn't forget about this promise that we had, but I decided that it's not really for me. I can't marry a princess. I don't understand the ways of royalty. It wouldn't make sense for me to marry her. You know what? You have my blessings. And they said, you know, we want to give you a treasure chest of gold and silver because as a thank you for this. So you know what? That's going to be my present to the princess. I don't need it. I'm okay. I have my farm doing fine. Take it with you and go back. They take that back with them to the palace. And they invite him to come with them to the wedding. And as they're going through the forest to the wedding, there was a band of thieves that jumped on this whole entourage. And this whole story, by the way, is in the Medrash. It's in the Medrash as a divorce. They jumped on this entourage, and the band of thieves, they took the princess and they brought her to the head of the bandits. And they said, that's it. This girl is going to marry the head of the bandits. She's all ready for a wedding, and she's going to be the kala of the head of the bandits, an 80-year-old man. And she's like, you know, his guy's 80 years old. How am I going to marry head of the bandits, 80-year-old man? And she starts to cry to him as they're getting together. He says, I can't marry you. You're not. Let me tell you the story. And she says the whole story. And he gets all emotional. Wow, that's an amazing story. You had the prince was willing to give you up back because you wanted to keep your word to the farmer's son. The farmer's son's willing to give you up. He says, and I'm an older man. The truth is, you know what? I'm going to give you go and marry the prince. And I'm okay. I'm okay. I'll give up my rights to the story. And he says, and she says, okay, please come to the wedding. He comes to the wedding, and they're all there. The prince is there. The farmer's son is there. And so is the head of the bandits. And they get married. And the Roman emperor asks Shlomo HaMelech, who is the most noble of them all? Is it the head of the bandits, who he could have taken this girl and married her? Is it the princess who kept her word? Or is it the farmer's son who gave up on this girl? And the Shlomo HaMelech says to these three people, he says, who do you think is the most noble? So one of them said it was the head of the bandits, and one of them said it was the princess, the farmer's son, one of them said it's the princess. And right away Shlomo HaMelech jumped up and said that the one who said it's the head of the bandits, he's the thief. And they said, what does that mean? How do you know? So Shlomo HaMelech wrote in Mishlei, Ish lefi ma'aloloi. A person is according to who he respects and praises. In the entire story, the head of the bandits didn't really have a right. He was a thief. He's not noble if he gives us something he didn't have a right for. The princess, it's her life, and she could really decide if she wants to marry this man. I mean, she's going to have a promise, but she could say, I don't want to do this. Sorry, I'm taking back my word. But she didn't. She kept her word. And the farmer's son also, he had the rights, but he gave up his rights. But the head of the bandits didn't have a right to respect him at all. There's the thief. And because this person says he praises a thief, that means that's who he is. When Hashem judges us in these days, it's according to who you respect. And I want everybody to think about who they respect, because that's going to be who you're about. Great people become who they become a lot of times because they read about great men. They read great biographies. They read great stories. When you think about that, and you think about the future, you say, Hashem, I want to be in the book of Tzaddikim and Chassidim. Hashem says, that's who you are. That's how he judges you now, on these days. When we say these words, may Hashem help us to be that. But I just want to remind you that in order for you to get to that place, to become a real tzaddik, to really become who you want to become, a lot of times you have to just let go of things from the past. Can't let those things from the past take you down. You can't let the anger and the resentment and the feelings of failure. A lot of times we have to learn how to forgive ourselves. We have to learn how to forgive our parents and to forgive our past in order for us to go to the future. May Hashem help us. Mizrachet to have a beautiful, beautiful day.
I have a question. If someone, let's say I'll use your case, someone's in the bathroom, he runs out of toilet paper.
Yes.
And he's angry.
He's angry, yes.
How is he supposed to lose the anger? Like, you're supposed to. How is it, you so said, what do we say? What come do we back
say?
To yourself.
No, no, what do we say to do? Ask the question. The
question is,
who am I angry at?
Yes.
And what did he do? So who are you angry at? Let's go to this. There's no tissues in the bathroom.
The janitor.
Who are you angry at? You're angry at the janitor? What did the janitor do wrong?
We think that he didn't put toilet paper in there.
Okay. Yeah, is that the truth?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the truth, that he didn't put toilet paper? Maybe he put him in the guy before you.
Yeah. Part of the truth.
It could be part of it. Is there anything
deeper? Maybe they tried to clean up the blood.
Maybe, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe they tried to clean up the blood.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Go ahead. Thank you for coming and enjoying.
I'm so excited. I saw the sign. I was like, oh man. I've been waiting years for that hug.
Thank you. By the way, everything I am today, by the way, was inspired from my first conversation with this person.
You know why? Because they learned what not to do from me. That's it. Yeah, right to
Thank you.
More often.
Okay. So, is that where did the guy? He disappeared already with the guy's anger at
the He was so happy with that answer.
He just ran away. Oh, that's it. I'm not angry anymore.
There's a thing of like being upset at a situation, but realizing, okay, this is the situation ahead and now move forward.
Yes, because the exact situation that you're in is exactly what Hashem wants. That is what Hashem wants. And the fact that you're angry is meaning to say that you have your own God. You don't believe that the situation is your decision. What is exactly what Hashem wants it to be. Yud Kei Vav Kei means Hashem is Mahaveh. He makes the world to be the way it is. So when you're angry, when in the stream they see a frog and they're angry at it, they start hitting it, even though they see that there's more and more frogs coming out. Why they keep hitting it? Because they're saying that this frog is not supposed to be here.
So upset,
but the frog is here, just let it be. If they wouldn't...